This is Cam.
And I'm Jen.
And you're listening to
Our True Crime Podcast.
Everything's getting a little hectic now, isn't it?
It is back to school time.
Back to school time. I'm kind of relieved because
I'm kind of not.
I am. But I'm glad to see my kids go back to school. I always tell them I love them more because I can miss them.
Yeah.
I know that's
AKA,
wrong.
AKA, I have 8 hours to myself to do what I
want
to do.
To do what I want and not have to worry about, you touched me. You're...
Stop it.
Get out of my room. Yeah.
I'm bored.
Oh my gosh.
No. That's a big no. So what do you got for us today? What you got?
Well, you know, I like cold cases.
I do know you like them. Since like cold,
know,
like your heart.
Cold, like my cold, dead heart. So as I was researching this case, I kind of got led down a rabbit hole.
Oh.
There was a connection that I never knew existed before.
Okay.
So let me take the two cases together.
Oh.
And then I'll let you know why, okay?
Okay.
On the evening of August 5th, 1989 in Fredericktown, Missouri, 13-year-old Gina Dawn Brooks had just gotten home from spending the day with her family at the ballpark watching her brother play baseball. Around 10 or 10:30, she informed her family that she was going to go ride her bike to her boyfriend's house, TJ. He only lived a few blocks away. She never returned. And as the night went on, people were starting to get very worried.
What time was this that she left?
She left her house at about 10:30.
At night?
At night.
It's kind of late. Okay.
Well, funny you should say that. Gina's mom was worried that people would wonder why she let her daughter out so late. And she told everybody, she said she had always preached to Gina to watch out when she was out at night and be careful of her surroundings. And Gina was like a normal teen, said, oh gosh, mom, you're so old fashioned. Oh, mom, just chill out. I'm fine. I know everybody in Fredericktown. Her mom's like, well, you don't know everyone in Fredericktown. Just be careful.
I get it.
It was summer, small town.
She's 13.
So she never returned. And her parents started to get worried. And finally, at 2 a.m., they called the police. Reports have said Gina was standing near a church when a battered, like, gray, green, or blue station wagon with Missouri license plates pulled up. They had seemed to have been following her. Gina then got on her bike and left to get away from them. Later, the station wagon drove by Gina's boyfriend's house.
Okay.
And they had heard someone screaming, TJ, help!
Really?
Yeah.
I have never heard that part. Ew.
The vehicle was then seen turning left, driving towards Highway 67. Later, Gina's bicycle was found abandoned on a residential lawn on High Street, 5 blocks from her house. There is no sign of her, and she had not been seen again. The Fredericktown Police Department, Sheriff's Department, and the FBI have followed through with every lead, followed through with all the evidence. Nothing has come through. Nothing has panned out, so we're still looking for Gina. Let me tell you about what great lengths these police officers have gone to try to find Gina. They really do follow up every lead. A woman had gone to the police and said that as she was praying, she had a vision that Gina's body and the getaway car was at the bottom of this rain-filled quarry.
Oh.
35 miles east of where she was abducted, right? So they had it drained. Gina's mother calls the story a bunch of bull and just said that the police were totally wasting her time. And she actually was right.
There was nothing found,
yeah. Right? And so basically that's the end of Gina's story. That's all they know of.
Wow.
The other case that has always interested me, and I know it's interested you, Angie Houseman.
Yes. I worked in TV news when that story broke. So
yeah, I remember that because I was at the bookstore.
Yeah.
And terrible. I remember you called me. Here's Angie's story. Everybody who knew Angie described her as being very outgoing.
She was very friendly.
She was very friendly. She always wanted to make new friends. And people said that one of her phrases that she always used was, hi, my name's Angie. Are you my friend? On the afternoon of November 18th, 1993, Angie Houseman got off the bus. She only lived 4 blocks from school. It wouldn't take her very long to get home, even if she stopped and talked to people. But that day, she never came home. Within a half hour of her not coming home, Angie's parents started to get worried.
Right.
And what's really weird is on a typical day after school, 2 or 3 adults that kept an eye on the bus stop, because we have that in our subdivision too, that people come out and look at the bus stop. But on the day Angie vanished, of course, nobody was there. One neighbor who always looked side of her window was busy with her child with homework that day. Another neighbor that stood outside was not at home. She was tending to a sick father.
That kind of leads me to believe that somebody was watching.
If it was any other day, it probably would not have happened.
Right.
But since everybody was not at their posts, After 30 minutes, the family became concerned because Angie always came straight home. Panic set in, and so they called the police. And by the next day, everybody here in St. Louis and surrounding areas knew that poor Angie was missing. Interesting enough, 2 days prior to Angie's disappearance, the police received a report from a woman in the neighborhood or in the area saying that there was a suspicious-looking male. She described the male as having a beard and wearing a long coat.
A long coat in the summer? Was this the summer?
It was in November. And, it can get brutally cold here in St. Louis. So the police, at the time, nothing out of the ordinary happened. So the police chief shrugged it off. After Angie's disappearance, the police looked into everybody. They talked to family, friends, and teachers. Mm-hmm. And they discovered that Angie had spoken to her teacher about how excited she was because she had an uncle that was going to take her to the countryside that day. So with that information, the police, who had already spoken with all of her family, they didn't know which uncle she was referring to or how to locate this person.
Right. Like,
so here's a little story that was in the newspaper while Angie was missing. Kind of interesting, kind of weird. But one Sunday, a 13-year-old boy who the press called David was visiting a friend's house, and they were gathered in front of the TV watching football. And during one of the news breaks, a reporter comes on telling everybody about the continuing search for Andrea Houseman is still going on. She hasn't been found yet. This David kid says, oh, I know where they'll find her. They'll find her at the Bush Wildlife Area. She will be tied to a tree.
Ugh.
When they asked him, he just said, oh, I had a dream. It was a dream. But nobody called the police. They just thought crazy.
I wouldn't call the police either, but that's weird.
But then later, when the mom was asked about it, she's like, oh, yeah, our family's known for having things in dreams. And
the mom of the boy?
The mom of the boy, yeah. So, I don't know. Anyway, but strangely enough, 9 days later after Angie disappeared and 2 days after David told everybody about his dream, two deer hunters in a wooded area known as August A. Bush Memorial Conservation Area, they found the small body of Angie Houseman.
Ugh.
And it's so disturbing and so horrific what this little 9-year-old went through. This gets kind of graphic, and if it's hard, so if you can't listen to it, don't worry. Just turn it off right now. Here's what happened. Angie's body was discovered nude. Some say she was chained. Others say she was taped, but she was
affixed
to a tree somehow. Her hands were bound behind her with handcuffs that were made from Taiwan. Either duct tape or gaff tape was wrapped tightly around her forehead, covering her eyes and her mouth. Due to low temperatures, and it's freezing in St. Louis, ice accumulating in her hair and on her cheeks, and she was frozen, basically. Mm-hmm. Her body was incredibly frail because she had been not given any water or food.
Mm-hmm.
20 feet from her body was her backpack that contained her books and clothes she wore the day of the disappearance, along with her winter coat.
So can we say that she was abducted from getting off the bus probably and taken directly there?
No, because they had held her for at least 9 days.
They did?
Yeah.
No, that's fine. I'm just saying because the backpack was there. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, well, they just wanted to get rid of the evidence, I'm sure. They didn't want anything associated with Angie Houseman to be with them.
Yes.
Right? Okay. So the medical examiners later concluded that Angie's autopsy showed signs of being beaten severely for days, along with molestation and being sexually tortured in extreme matters.
Ugh.
Ultimately, the cause of death was caused by exposure.
Yeah, see that? They didn't even have the guts to kill her. They just left her out there to die.
That's, right. And it was because of the cold temperatures and she didn't have any food and water. Her body wasn't strong enough. But the sad part, examiners determined that her death occurred a few hours before she was discovered. If those hunters would have been there just a few hours earlier, they would have found her alive. She did fight. I mean, that pretty much proves that she fought to the very end and she did her best poor not baby. To give up to those that awful, despicable, nasty person that stole her from her family. The police have speculated that Angie's killer could be a teenager because approximately 100 feet away from where she was discovered, it's a dead-end road, and that's what people call Lover's Lane, and that's where popular hangout for teenagers. Yeah, and they also think that Angie knew the person who took her, but they...
Why did they think that, did it say?
Because it was so quiet, like, they believe that she would have pitched a fit or
I got
you. She went willingly,
yes.
Basically. They also, you know, they checked out all the family members. But like I said, right.
Nobody knows who that uncle was that was going to take her to the woods.
Okay. They can't come up with anybody. The good news is that the duct tape that was used to restrain Angie mm-hmm. did have fingerprints on it. Mm. As far as I know, no match has been made. I think they also have DNA, but I wasn't able to like really
find that.
So here's where it gets interesting.
Like that wasn't. Okay. Yeah,
poor Angie and poor Gina. I mean, Gina's body's never been found. I don't want to say at least, but Angie's family has closure. I think the worst part would be not knowing where your child is.
I agree.
So let's fast forward 3 years. Mm-hmm. Angie Houseman's disappearance was in 93. In 1996, in a St. Louis hospital, there was a man by the name of Bryant Squires. He was dying of cancer and AIDS-related complications. Mm-hmm. He told the nurses that were working with him that he wanted to make his peace and he wanted to be able to go to God. Clear his conscience, right? Yes. She said, okay, go on. And he proceeded to tell her all about his involvement in several killings, two of which, Gina Brooks and Angie Houseman. The nurses really didn't go to the authorities at first because what he told them was so horrible. They just thought it couldn't be true.
Right.
And plus, I'm sure he was on medication. Mm-hmm. And so Squire told the nurse that he and his friends, Nathan Danny Williams and Timothy Bellows, had gone to Fredericktown, Missouri, and Squires had driven. And they were driving around looking for drugs. He claimed he just drove the car. Williams kidnapped Gina. Mm-hmm. And then after Gina's throat was slashed by Williams, uh-huh. Squires and Bellow got rid of the body.
Did they ever acknowledge where they put it?
Well, funny you should say that.
It's almost like we're connected.
It is. You'd think. It's not like we'd known each other for X amount of years. The police took the deathbed confession seriously, and they ran with it.
Okay.
In 1998, they had enough circumstantial evidence to put first-degree murder on Williams mm-hmm. and then second-degree murder on Bellow for the murder of Gina.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay.
The case was kind of iffy. They had a lot of circumstantial evidence and not a lot.
Did they base part of that on the deathbed confession?
Yeah, but unfortunately, there wasn't enough hard evidence and they didn't want to go to trial because they were afraid of an acquittal. Right. They didn't want the double jeopardy to come in play.
Correct.
Right? Because once they try him and he's acquitted, that's it. They can't try him again. But they did get Bellow. Bellow said that he knew exactly where the body was buried, right? Mm-hmm. And he said that he and Squires placed Gina's body in a freezer with rotted deer meat.
Ugh.
And then they buried it somewhere on his family's 96 acres.
Oh.
But he knew exactly where it was.
Well, did he take them?
He took them there and there's nobody ever found.
Was there a freezer found?
Nothing.
Oh.
Nothing was found. Once they dropped the charges against Bellows, they got him on lying to the FBI mm-hmm. about where her remains are. Mm-hmm. And he served a 30-month
sentence. Why did he do that? Why would he do that?
I don't know. His family says that he's not right. He's got psychological problems.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Obviously, right? So, he's pretty much of a mess too, because after he got out of prison, he got in trouble with burglary, theft.
He's just a hot mess.
Right. And he had been in and out, or he had been in prison before for raping a 7-year-old.
Oh.
He served 5 years. So,
I mean it's not out of the question that he could be part of this.
You're
pretty sure he was.
Yeah. So, Williams, they didn't have any hard evidence, but they did have circumstantial evidence. Okay. Here's some circumstantial evidence. First one, the eyewitness who is now living in Houston claims that he saw Williams and Gina sitting in the back of Squire's station wagon at a campground in Fredericktown, Missouri. Gina looked very worried. Oh. I would be too if somebody
took
me.
Did it say what date that was? Like how much after?
It was right after.
Okay.
It was right after. Because Squires had said that immediately after they killed her. There's evidence that Gina bit Williams as he was sexually assaulting her. And there's also evidence he got treatment for the wound.
Really?
I can't go into anything because that's all I know.
And the police wouldn't say that because that would be a good indication to prove they had the right person. So I get that.
Right. The testimony from some of Williams's friends and cellmates said that William told them things about Gina's clothing that only the killer would know. They have testimony that Williams had noticed Gina at least two other times while he was visiting his brother in Frederickstown. Oh, and which his brother's friend lived very close to Gina. So he also failed the lie detector test, which really doesn't mean everything, but they said he failed it miserably.
I think the biting thing and that the police have evidence of that, that just tells me that it makes me believe that he really was involved. And they know that. They just can't, they can't pin it on him. But.
Right. And another reason why I think they've dropped the charges, or so far dropped the charges, until they get more. I mean, they're still going after this case, but they just want, the case is still open. He's still a major suspect. And just because they dropped the charges doesn't mean they're not going to go after him. They just want hard evidence. They want to lock the man away. But he's already serving two consecutive life terms.
And that might be part of it, too.
As for the Angie case, Squire said that he and another man kidnapped Angie and held her for several days. Didn't say where they held her or even who the man was.
Squire and his accomplice did know the
neighborhood very well because why? Drugs. They went there to for drug dealing.
Mm-hmm. Told you drugs, boys and girls, it leads to bad, bad things.
Right. And he also said that they did tie Angie to the tree, but they were scared off because there was a passerby. And they just never went back.
That I believe.
Right.
Because I find it weird that that poor little baby would be tortured for all that time and then you just walk away. So right. I do believe that.
The police never did find out who the accomplice was because Squires passed away right after he confessed.
They do know that it wasn't Williams because he was in prison.
At this time, the police can't really pin the murder of Angie Houseman on Squires. They took his fingerprints and the fingerprints do not match up with what was found on the duct tape at Angie Houseman's crime scene. That doesn't mean that Squires is innocent. It just means that they can't place Squires at the scene.
Squire also said that he had information that Williams fatally stabbed a social worker in 1974.
Mm.
Which is weird because in 1974, there was a woman
who was stabbed.
Laura Dinwiddie was 23, and she'd been stabbed twice in the chest and once in the abdomen, and her throat was slashed. She hadn't been raped, but the police suspect it was because she resisted the attackers. Dinwiddie was actually a worker for Veterans in Service to America, or VISTA, which is referred to as a domestic peace corps.
Okay, so she was sort of a social worker.
She was sort of a social worker. Assisted. She moved here from Greenwich, Connecticut. And she moved to North 21st Street, which is low income.
Really at that time.
Yeah, but sure. Yeah. Right. She taught lower income kids how to swim. Sometimes she made her own puppets to entertain the children while she taught.
Oh, yeah.
She even did volunteer work for the School of the Deaf. So the case stayed cold until 1978, where one day an 18-year-old went into a bar and told a bartender that he knew who had killed Laura Dinwiddie. The bartender, of course, being a good citizen, told the police. The detectives questioned the informant who? Nathan Danny Williams. He was 14 at the time.
That's crazy.
He also said he and another boy who was also 14 lived in the same area. They couldn't get any information. The lawyers said, don't talk, blah, blah, blah. And they never really pressed charges, right? Fast forward, the police, since Squires had said, you know, this about Williams killing Laura Dinwiddie, and the detective said, well, you know, a lot of things that he said has already panned out. I'm going to look into it. And sure enough, he found this old case that Williams' name is attached to it. So he goes to the Farmington Correctional Center, where he is serving two consecutive life sentences as a persistent sexual offender. He was convicted in 1989 of a brutal assault to a 10-year-old girl.
Ugh.
The victim required surgery after she was raped and sodomized in Belle Reve Park.
So obviously this is his thing. Like, he likes this. So it would totally make sense. But
right. Williams is a burly 230 pounds, scraggly brown hair, and a mustache with arms covered with tattoos.
And he's the one that said he was involved with Gina Dawn Brooks?
That's the one that said to have slit Gina Dawn Brooks's after he molested her.
Okay. Because the time frame, does that work then? Because she disappeared in 89 too, and he was convicted in 89?
Yeah. She actually, it was 1 month after Gina disappeared.
Okay.
And then 1 month after that,
wow.
This girl was found brutally sodomized and raped.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All these years later, Williams has a different story now, right?
Of course he does.
He said he was there, but he didn't do it because they're all innocent. He did name the suspect that he named Pryor, but he said also the brother of the suspect.
He added the brother.
Right. He added the suspect's brother.
Why would he do that?
Maybe the older brother and he was afraid of him.
That's true.
You know, he said that they had grabbed her while she was going into the building and it startled her. They forced her up the stairs and into the apartment where the one brother held a knife to her throat and ordered her to disrobe. When Dinwiddle struggled, she was stabbed and the three teens led. The suspect was located and he agreed to a questioning and even volunteered to come back the next day to take a lie detector test. And his answers indicated that he was telling the truth and repeating his claims of innocence. Papa said, the detective said he's still keeping an open mind about this man because even though he did okay with the test, right. He passed the test.
It can be beatable. It is beatable.
He was a heavy marijuana smoker.
Oh.
And even smoked before taking the test.
Sorry, but that is a depressant and probably would make your heart rate and pulse fly off the chart.
Right. Yes. They even talked to this man's brother and he lives out of state now. And the brother said that he knew who Williams was, but he didn't have anything to do with the killing. Besides Squire saying that Williams committed the murder of Laura, there's really no evidence that he did. It's been long gone. He doesn't admit it. I mean, he also denies Gina's murder. He denies everything. Of course he does. A former cellmate of his had come forward and said Williams also bragged about abducting another child. And this was Tammy Rose Surdam. S-U-R-D-A-M, Surdam, I believe. Surdam. Last time she was seen was August 1st, 1979. She was a known runaway. Actually, they called her a chronic runaway.
How old was she?
12. She was seen at a shelter in St. Charles before she left, and she was only there for 2 days. She disappeared, and she never was seen again. Her family said she began getting in trouble 2 years prior. She was spending time, of course, with bad kids, the ones who drank, used drugs. She was too trusting. And here's what kills me. She was last seen on August 1st, 1979.
As a 12-year-old.
Since she was a chronic runaway, her parents never really reported her missing. And they became suspicious
what?
In 1988.
Hold the phone. She disappeared in what year?
79.
And they reported her what year?
I think it was 1988, but I have heard reports that it was...
If it wasn't within 2 hours, I have a problem with it.
Well, she was close to her dad, and they became worried when she didn't get in touch with the family after her dad died. And that was in 1988.
She was 12,
That's I know.
That's a baby.
Yeah, they said because she was a chronic runaway, the family wasn't initially concerned.
For 10 years.
After time passed, without hearing from her, they got worried.
People are crazy. They're crazy. So,
yeah. Yeah. Williams reportedly told two witnesses he abducted a 12-year-old girl off the street near college in St. Charles in the late 1970s, raped her, stabbed her to death, and buried her. And this is pretty much what would match Tammy's disappearance. So because she was the only child at that age that disappeared from St. Charles during that time period and was never found.
I have questions.
And it was just 4 blocks from Linwood College, so... Although there's no...
Let's do a little background.
There's no hard evidence about it.
Let's do a little background here for the people out there that aren't familiar. St. Charles is a very suburban... I mean, it is a good 45 minutes from downtown St. Louis. It's pretty far out there. It's very family-oriented. It is not a quote-unquote bad area.
Not at all.
It's a good... And so how in the world are these losers getting away with abducting all these kids?
I don't know. The guy admitted to being at Laura... Dinwiddie's house when he was 14. He was 14.
Do these people... Where are the parents?
I don't know.
Come on. Okay, so we weren't that much younger. And you better believe if I wasn't home every night, as you, I'm sure. Like, that's crazy.
Well, I cannot believe that the parents did not report their child missing, even if she was a chronic runaway.
That much time difference in the world that would make you not report
right.
your child.
And it's not really for certain when, but it has been stated that it was years and that they, you had said they only got worried when she didn't get in touch with the family after the dad died in 88. That bothers
me. That would make her...
At 12, if my daughter... My daughter's 12 now, 24. And if she would be gone...
I know the patterns and where they are and what... There's just no way.
This Nathan Danny Williams, he is a
Let's just call him Nate Dan.
Something.
Oh, yeah.
He's slippery.
Jesus. It,
there's no evidence to any of these killings that he was involved. I mean, there's a circumstantial evidence in the Gina Brooks case.
The parents said he wasn't quite right. Was it?
No, that was the other guy.
Okay.
Tim Bellows. Danny Williams, how he was able to get away with this for so long is unreal. And how there's no evidence. I mean, there's no hard evidence. It looks pretty cut and dry that he did murder Gina, but there's no hard evidence. He couldn't have been involved with Angie Housman's because he was in prison for the rape of the 10-year-old. The initial wanted poster, the artist sketch. Forensic, the artist sketch of the person that was seen in the area at the time of Angie's disappearance looks a lot like the one picture I could find of Danny Williams. To me, if I were to say who this person is, it was either Danny Williams or somebody related to Danny Williams because they look very familiar. And I'll even put it up on our website for everybody to see.
Yes, they do look a lot alike.
They do. It's amazing. And there's no evidence that he, besides him blowing his mouth about the Tammy Sutton, there's no evidence there. There's really, he admits to being at the scene with Dinwiddie, but no real evidence there. He refuses to admit
that he did it.
That he killed her. He still claims that the other two did, but they deny everything. Well, not another thing that's interesting is, due to the Gina Brooks investigation with Williams, many law enforcement agencies, including some in Utah and Arizona, have been looking into Williams. So we might have a serial rapist,
killer.
Definitely a predator, but thank God he's serving two life sentences in prison already.
Right, right.
But who knows all the damage he's done.
What did he do for a living? Do you know?
I do not know.
Because if they're different states, he's probably like a truck driver or something that would take him elsewhere, or he had family there.
Right.
So let's do a breakdown on who's... So the one guy,
Bryant
Squires. Squires died, right?
He died shortly after he confessed.
Okay, and...
And the nurses really never went to the police because they... Did I say that already?
Yeah, but I think that medication plus AIDS, I think that it does mess with your mental.
Right. And plus, like all the cancer, you're on
and the drugs, the
hardest drugs for the pain. So I'm sure that they just, you know, but honestly, and I'm not blaming the nurses for not coming forward because I don't know if I'd believe them either. But like one little clue of Angie Housman, I probably would have said, I don't know if this means anything. And see, it could mean nothing. Would
too, just, but that's, yeah. But then again, you know, maybe those nurses, they probably hear and see so much stuff.
I would be interested if there's any nurses out there that work, or hospice workers or anybody that has ever heard deathbed confessions or of any sort, whether it's they took a gumball or they,
that would be interesting.
Or something.
Hit us up.
Hit us up. Let us know. Tweet us or whatever. We'll give you all the details later. But I'm sure they hear a lot of it.
No, that's what. So I'm not so sure if, and especially if you'd been doing it for, you know, 30 years or something.
Right. But yeah, Squires was 37 when he passed.
Mm-hmm.
And he was basically, I believe, the only witness to the case. So once, or one's willing to talk anyway.
Right.
So once he passed, there wasn't anybody else that's willing to talk.
All right. Okay. And then Nate Dan, where's he?
He is in a penitentiary here in
Farmington.
Farmington.
Right. Okay. And then where's the other one? Wasn't there a third guy?
There's Tim Bellows.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure. I know he spent 30 months in prison.
Okay.
In 99. But, and I'm not sure. I'm sure he's still back in his state with his parents. And, you know, his parents said that since he wasn't that smart, that he probably would have, just to get the police to quit talking to him, he would have said anything.
Yeah, and I totally get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
False confession because he wants to go home. Well,
yeah.
That's,
Yeah, it's very sad. So anyway, the police are still taking any leads, even if it doesn't concern this, Williams guy or Bellows guy or Squires. They want any information that you have. If you were a child, maybe on the bus with Angie Housman and you remember seeing a car, person, anything, please try to get in touch with the police department anywhere in St. Louis. Call the hotline. I'll put all the information on the webpage. And let's get this solved. It kills my soul. And especially now that I have children and one about the age of Angie, it's heartbreaking. It's, and the parents deserve justice.
Unbelievable.
And Gina's family, they all deserve justice.
They do. I just can't. That's why cold cases bug me.
That's why I love them, because one of these days they will get justice. I have the faith.
But then I just think that there's so many bad people in the world that don't. They don't. They continue their happy little lives.
But with all this new DNA stuff that's coming out, it's going to be few and far between. And hopefully we will not, we'll have to think of another podcast to do besides true crime.
I hope so.
So.
Can we go to prison? I want to go to prison.
You want to go to prison and interview somebody?
Yeah, I love that stuff.
Okay. Let's see what we can find.
Okay.
All right. Just as long as it's not like, what happened to Clarice when she walked through the prison.
Well, maybe.
Silence of the Lambs. Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.
You can find us on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can write us an email, ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook page that you can log on. And we also have a blog, which is www.ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Anything else you want to add?
No, I don't think so. Thank you for listening. Thank you for giving us, five stars.
And yeah, if you do like this, tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell whoever you will listen, or tell anybody who will listen.
If you really hate us, then tell somebody that you don't like to listen to us. And then you can
be miserable. Leave us a 5-star review, like and subscribe. Actually, if you write us a review, let us know at one of the aforementioned places, and we'll get in touch with you by a message, and we'll send you some free stuff.
And a brand new car!
You get a car. Not really. No cars will be given unless they're Matchbox.
There you go.
But anyway, thanks so much. Give us a holler. Chat us. Let us know how you feel. About anything, really. We're willing to talk. It gets lonely now that the kids are in school.
Gets lonely in the basement.